could there be a scenario where a bus driver is like dating someone and brings her date to come along and be on the bus? Like,
there is actually a whole Days of Our Lives drama that happens between any group of humans, well, by any means.
True.
But there are a number of our frontline employees that met their spouses while driving the bus.
Get out.
Yeah.
So, and were other bus drivers or patrons on the bus?
Both.
Okay. Could they rent a bus to be, get married on a bus?
We actually have weird limitations in federal law about what we can take money for. So if somebody really wants to take their wedding photos on a Kent Metro bus, call us up. We'll figure it out.
This episode is brought to you by Texas Mutual Insurance Company, the state's leading provider of workers' compensation insurance. Since 1991, Texas Mutual has been helping employers prevent workplace accidents. To learn more about how Texas Mutual provides a competitively priced source of workers' comp insurance for Texas employers, visit www.texasmutual.com. Welcome to Austin Hires Local, your inside access to the work behind workforce development, powered by Workforce Solutions Capital Area. Join us as we dive deep into conversations with trailblazers across the local, state, and national workforce development ecosystem. From elected officials to industry leaders and educators, we uncover candid insights and innovative solutions shaping our workforce landscape. Get ready to explore the intersection of education, economy, and opportunity. This is Austin Hires Local, where the future of our workforce begins.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Austin Hires Local podcast. My name is Tamara Atkinson, and I have the privilege of speaking to leaders from our community, from our state, from our country, on the record about workforce talent issues. Today, I am joined by my friend and colleague, the president and CEO of Kent Metro, Dottie Watkins. Dottie, we're so glad to have you here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, today on the podcast, I'm hoping we can really talk about three things. I'd love to hear your journey to becoming the CEO of Kent Metro. I understand you grew up in Austin. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about that. I'm hoping we can talk about the connection between transit and getting people to work and talent development. So how transit and workforce work together. And then third, I'm really curious about technology and technology advances. I'm hoping that you will tell us a little bit about where you see the future of transit going.
Sounds great.
Are you game for jumping in?
Let's do it.
All right, Dottie, I am so excited to have you on camera with me today to talk about you and what's going on in Kent Metro. There's a question I love to ask all my guests when they come on the podcast, because we're Workforce Solutions, mm-hmm. because we are about jobs and connecting people to jobs. I like to ask people, so I'll ask you, what was your first job?
My very first job, I was a lifeguard in high school.
All right. Tell me more about that. Where was this?
Yeah. So I grew up here in Austin, and I was a pool rat my whole youth. I loved to swim. I would be literally at the pool from like roughly noonish until the streetlights came on when I had to be home for dinner.
Okay.
And I was always swimming, always swimming, always swimming. And the year I turned 16, my mom was like, well, you know, you're not old enough to work. Maybe you should go be a lifeguard. And I was like, that sounds fun. And so I was a lifeguard. So I was a lifeguard for a couple of summers at the end of high school, beginning of college.
Okay. So lifeguard, did you ever get to save anyone's life?
Thankfully, no.
And that's why you stayed being a lifeguard.
That's why I stayed. Yeah, that feels like it would be very stressful, but no.
I think so.
I told a lot of kids to stop running.
Always.
That was no horseplay. Those were number one reasons for the whistle.
And so now when you're at a pool and you see kids running, do you kind of twitch? Like, I'm going to tell them to stop running.
I do. And I still, we were trained to say walk, please, instead of no running,
because
your brain naturally responds to a command better than, if I tell you don't think of an elephant, you just thought of an elephant. So if I say no running, you think about running. But if I say walk, please, it makes you think about walking. Anyway, that's what they taught me when I was 16. And so even when I see kids running at pools, I want to scream at them, walk, please.
Walk, please. Okay. All right. Well, so from lifeguard to CEO of Kent Metro, you have had a really inspiring journey. So can you tell us a little more about, I know you've told your story about starting with a bus driver, mm-hmm. but I'd like to know, why were you inspired to work at Kent Metro? And because at Workforce Solutions, we believe in connecting people with mentors, like who helped you along the way in your journey to become a CEO?
Yeah, absolutely. So my original inspiration was I wanted money. Right?
Well,
it's what most people get jobs for.
I appreciate your honesty.
So when I was a student at the University of Texas,
my
dad worked at Cap Metro. He worked in vehicle maintenance. And he learned that they were looking to hire student drivers. Like, they really wanted true part-time folks who weren't going to be mad that they weren't getting full-time hours. And so they were targeting college students. And they thought, let's go see if we can get some college students recruited. And his comment to me was, I have one of those still living in my house. Maybe she wants the job. And so he convinced me that it would be a great job. And it was the perfect part-time college job for me because it allowed me to have my weekends still off. I had to get up early in the morning, but I worked mornings. I was able to go to school in the afternoons and evenings. It worked out great. And really, toward the end of my tenure as an undergraduate, I made the determination that I wasn't sure what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I needed work, but I wasn't sure that I wanted to actually work in the field I'd been studying. I studied social work, and I started to realize that I wasn't sure I had the temperament to be a full-time social worker.
Yeah.
And that was terrifying, but I was fortunate that my supervisor at the time at Cap Metro asked me one day. I think he was trying to feel out like when I was going to quit because they all knew I was graduating, and I gave him I don't know what I'm going to do, and he immediately said, "Do you want to train? You're great at training." And I was like, "Sure, full time job, whatever." It sounded fun,
yeah.
And so I took a job training bus operators full time. Loved it. Had a lot of fun doing that. Had the great support of kind of the curriculum. I wasn't having to create any of that stuff.
Yeah.
I already knew how to do it. Really enjoyed it, and really just sort of fell in love with the people of public transit.
Mm-hmm.
I always say that public transit is a people business. We both serve people, but it takes a lot of people to serve those people.
Mm-hmm.
And the human side of the business is the part that I really fell in love with. And it spoke to my social worker's heart, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really wanted to help people. And this gave me a way to do that that felt authentic to me, but maybe not quite as stressful and emotionally draining as I envisioned the work as a social worker would be. And so that's kind of what drew me in and kept me in the beginning, and then becomes momentum at some point. I just kept doing new and different things. It was a lot of fun. And the next thing you know, you look up and it's been 30 years and you're the CEO.
Tell me about it. So, but well, along those lines though, was there a moment when you realized maybe I do want to be the CEO?
About 6 months before I became the CEO.
Really?
No. I had always thought it would be great to move up.
Mm-hmm.
I had also always understood that it is actually quite rare for someone to like work in a transit system from the bottom all the way to the top of that transit system.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of, not as many today as there used to be, but there are a number of people at the top of transit organizations who started in frontline jobs as either operators or mechanics or kind of those entry-level positions. But to do that in one place is very rare. To stay in any one transit system your whole career is relatively rare because a lot of people want opportunities to move up. They don't see that happening immediately in their local hometown.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to move because there's only one transit system in every city. And so I'm a lifelong Austinite. My family's here. I grew up here. All my friends are here. I didn't want to leave. And so I sort of made peace with the fact that it's okay. I don't need to be CEO. I'll just do operations. I love operations.
Sure.
And it even convinced myself at one point that I wasn't sure I wanted to be CEO. But when the opportunity presented itself, I knew it was the right time.
So I've been the CEO almost 9 years here. I worked my way up. I didn't start driving a bus, but I started in contract management. I think I was surprised at the level of politics involved in leading an organization.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about transit and politics. How would you describe the state of transit in the local political sphere? Do you feel like people are generally supportive of what you're doing and what Cap Metro is doing?
I think people are.
I
feel very fortunate that the Central Texas community has come to understand that transportation requires a bunch of different solutions, and we're never going to have enough roads to solve all of the problems. Transit isn't going to solve all of our problems. There aren't enough bike lanes in the world to get everyone around, that it takes all kinds of different modes of transportation. And that hasn't necessarily always been true in Central Texas. We kind of grown into that understanding as mm-hmm. we've grown as a region. Mm-hmm. But I think we have a very supportive community that understands the value of public transportation. And I'm grateful for that. But I also know that it's my job, both me personally and our job as an organization at Cap Metro, to make sure that we continue to earn that trust and support every single day.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I hear you as an organization focused on talent and getting people to jobs. Transit is a big part of what we think about and what we do. So let's talk a little bit about workforce and talent. Yeah. Cap Metro was one of the early investors in the work we've been doing in mobility and infrastructure. Thank you. Thank you again for your support. I remember going to you early on and saying, Daddy, I got this kind of crazy idea. You got to trust me on this. And you have all along. You and your team have been very trusting. So let me ask you, what was it then and what was it now about why you and Cap Metro felt like it was important to invest in talent development in this community? So why would you put your money and your time in this way?
Well, you know, as we look to grow transit in this region and really coming off the November 2020 referendum where Project Connect, which is our vision for transit expansion for the region, was approved by the voters, we knew that we had a decade of massive growth ahead of us. And honestly, how are we going to get all of the workers to do all of this is something that we had no earthly idea what we were doing. And we looked around, we're like, we need help. Who can help us with this? Mm-hmm. And we were very fortunate that Workforce Solutions already existed, was already well entrenched in the community and kind of knew all of those bits and pieces. So when we raised our hands and said, hey, we kind of need some help figuring this out, uh-huh. we had a partner ready to step in and help us. And it was great because honestly, we didn't know all what we were doing.
Well, I can tell you this now. We had an idea of what we wanted to do, but we needed the resources and we needed the name recognition of an entity such as Cap Metro behind us, because I don't think others in the community would have taken us as seriously if we hadn't had your name and backing. So it was a good partnership. Thank you.
Look, if you take a great idea and a great need and you can find a way to marry those together, that's how good things happen. And I absolutely think that's what we've done here.
Exactly. Thank you. All right, let's keep talking a little bit about workforce. What, Dottie, are you seeing as some of the most pressing talent challenges you're having right now?
The sheer need for people is easily our biggest challenge. You know, it's a tough workforce market out there. There are a lot of people looking for jobs, but there are also a lot of open jobs. And so kind of the sorting through of what are the open jobs and where's the right place for me to fit mm-hmm. is tough for folks. And in public transit, we're looking for, we kind of have two categories of worker. We have kind of the people mm-hmm. who have those customer service mm-hmm. skills. We need a lot of bus operators. We need folks that can answer phones, those kinds of skills. And then we have the more technical kind of maintenance worker kind of roles. Mm-hmm. And so figuring out like how to find good sources, those are two completely different markets of humans that we need to figure out how to help them understand that we exist. And so very often when people grow up, very few kids grow up and say, one day I want to lead a life of public service and work in the public sector, right? I sure didn't. And mm-hmm. I'm the child of a Cap Metro employee and a school teacher. So why I did not think that of myself, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But like, it just wasn't something I thought about. Mm-hmm. We always think about going to work in business, right? I'm going to mm-hmm. go work for a business somewhere. And so a lot of people don't even think to look toward their local government entities when they're looking for employment. And so how do we help people see us as a good opportunity for not just a job, but a career? And that's something that, you know, we're just constantly having to make sure we're out there in the world telling people about us.
Yeah. And I know we're proud to partner with you. We've put on job fairs specifically for Cap Metro and invited you guys to other career fairs we've had to try to get the word out to people. And I want to give you props because one of the things I've seen in Cap Metro over the last 3 years or so we've worked together is I've seen you and your team analyze wages and bring up the wages of your bus drivers, for example. I've seen you look at and analyze like how might childcare be delivered for members of your team. And so I watch you and I want to praise you. I don't know that the community always sees the ways you really are trying to attract and retain talent. So props to you on that. And so let's talk a little bit about talent, because I think sometimes there's a tension between what we need right now and today. You said we need bodies. You said that's one of your most pressing challenges. But you and I as leaders also know we've got to be thinking about what's coming down the road. So how do you as a leader balance that tension of you need people now to operate services now with spending time and energy thinking of the future?
Well, you have to do both.
Yeah.
For sure, because you have to take care of today or tomorrow isn't guaranteed, right? Like mm-hmm. you have to be able to do what you need to do today. But if we always do what we've always done, then we're always going to get what we always got. Did mm-hmm. I say that right?
Yeah.
And so if we feel an urgent need for people today and mm-hmm. we aren't sure where we're going to get them, mm-hmm. we've got to solve that. But we also should start figuring out, like, what seeds can I plant today so that there might be a better pipeline of people coming my direction in the future? And mm-hmm. I think that's really where our partnership with Workforce Solutions has been very valuable, because we have been able to, you know, do some job fairs and work with your folks on people you're working with today who mm-hmm. are looking for work and try and make some good matches and help us solve the problem of today, but also help us think about how do we plant the seeds so that we can be better positioned for the future, especially at Capmetro. You know, our future isn't just keep up with what we're doing. We have an immense amount of growth coming our way with Project Connect and the implementation of the Austin Light Rail project. I mean, that's another 500 or 600 bodies.
And we're going to create jobs that don't even exist in Austin.
Things
right
that
now.
Don't even happen today.
Yeah,
right? Like we do not have a light rail signal maintainer in Austin, Texas, because we don't have a light rail system.
That makes sense.
And so how do we find that individual that has an interest and an aptitude for a career and working out in the world with gadgets and gizmos and doodads? Clearly it's not me, because I call them gadgets and gizmos and doodads. But how do we find that person and help them see that this is a place that they can thrive and an opportunity for them to get the right skills training and technical background so that they're ready to hop on board and get trained up on the systems that we have? Like, where do we find that match? And there's a lot of those different kinds of jobs. It's not like in some transportation sectors, like we compete heavily against like the trucking sector, right? They also need a lot of drivers. We need a lot of drivers. They
you mean
need a
you
lot
compete
of drivers.
With them.
We compete with them from yeah. for talent.
Sure.
But they're looking for drivers. I mean, like, that's their bread and butter. They need a yeah. ton of drivers. And I need a ton of drivers. But we have a ton of other positions as well mm-hmm. because we not only operate the thing, but we also maintain largely some of our own infrastructure. And so, you know, you have to be able to look for a broad array. And I think it's especially those technical jobs mm-hmm. that require a little bit more cultivation to make sure you've got the right talent in your local community. Otherwise, you're going to be paying a ton to relocate everybody. And that's not sustainable either. You're going to attract people from elsewhere, but you can't count on just hiring in people from other cities. That's never going to be a good strategy. This workforce challenge that you and I are talking about here is something that is broadly understood to be an issue throughout the entire public transportation industry.
Well, I don't know if that's good to hear or humbling to hear, but I would say as a workforce professional, I'm not surprised. But I'm curious, Dottie, as you participated last week and listened to your colleagues, what are some of the trends on the horizon when it comes to technology advancement? Like, how is your industry talking about what's ahead for the future?
Well, you know, one of the things that we are looking at a lot specific to workforce is how do we balance the kind of odd hours jobs that are in public transportation with people's desire to do something other than just work, right? And so we are an entity that, you know, we operate just about 24/7. There's actually a few hours in the wee hours of Sunday morning that we don't have a bus on the street, but we're always out there. And mm-hmm. so there always have mm-hmm. to be people working. And that can be really hard on a family, mm-hmm. on an individual who's trying to have a social life. Mm-hmm. And so figuring out how we balance those schedules and really thinking about, as an industry, we have to think about the people impacts of every decision that we make.
Oh, yeah.
Because we require so many people to do the work. We're a very long way from not needing people to drive buses, right? Mm-hmm. Now, that might one day come. And that is a technology that we're looking at.
I was going to ask you about that. Are autonomous buses in our future?
You know, okay. So I am an autonomous vehicle skeptic. I will start there. Because
so we won't see you in a Waymo anytime soon?
You probably won't, because I am frankly, I've seen way too many sci-fi movies okay. where like the robot car takes you to Timbuktu, and now what do? Now you've been kidnapped by the robot overlords.
With my luck,
know.
It would happen to
That's,
me.
That's I don't know. I am a little bit too much of a skeptic. But also, for about the last decade of my career, we've been talking about autonomous vehicles and how they're just right around the corner. Mm-hmm. And what we know, and the more we learn about what computers can do versus what humans can do, is that the human brain is an amazing thing. And the things that that go on in your head when you're driving mm-hmm. are a complex set of tasks. And so being able to completely automate all of that in such a way that you're going to have a computer drive a 40-foot or a 60-foot bus down a public roadway and stop at just the right place and open up the doors and welcome people on board. I believe even once we have vehicles that are capable of doing mm-hmm. that, and don't mm-hmm. get me wrong, I know we will one day get there. Mm-hmm. But when we welcome those people on board, I think we're still going to want an attendant on board mm-hmm. to help support those people, mm-hmm. to help make sure it's a comfortable experience, to help make sure that the vehicle is clean, mm-hmm. to help people with disabilities understand how to safely get secured in the vehicle, to help make sure fares are collected, to answer questions, to make sure no one gets lost, kind of keep a little bit of law and order and peacefulness on
sure,
the bus.
Sure, sure.
And so I think that need for human touch is not going to completely go away in our public transit systems. And so while, yes, I do think an automated future for vehicle transportation will change a lot of things about transportation, I'm not sure it will necessarily reduce our need for humans. It will just change what we need those people to do.
Interesting. Before I started talking to you about autonomous vehicles, you were talking about the tension and the trends that you and others are feeling about how do you help all your workers balance having a life? Have you at Cap Metro come up with anything that you're like, I think that's really interesting for us to try?
Well, one of the things that we've really leaned in on and something that you've and I have talked about multiple times is thinking about the issue of childcare
yes.
when it comes to workers.
Yes.
Because as a mom myself, I have a 10-year-old daughter. I understand how crazy it can be to try and manage that hectic schedule. Mm-hmm, and so mm-hmm. especially in organizations like Cap Metro, where our workers have these erratic, kind of irregular schedules, mm-hmm. being able to make sure that your children are safely cared for so that you can work can be a really complicated thing to do. And so that's something that's actually being looked at across the country as an issue for workers. And it's something that we've been doing for a long time at Cap Metro. We've had an on-site daycare. We have a third party that operates mm-hmm. it for us. And we recently kind of evolved our model to keep that on-site daycare, but to really look at being able to, instead of just having a one-site solution, and that was really all we had to offer, to be able to figure out a way to keep that going, but also provide a stipend to our most in need employees. So we have an income based stipend that we now give to employees to help them offset the cost of care, whatever that cost of care might need to be for them. It might be that they've got it covered except for on Tuesdays and they need to pay the neighbor to watch their kid, mm-hmm. right? Or, you know, they work these odd hours, so they need to go to an unconventional, you know, kind of in-home childcare center so that they can drop their kid off at 3 a.m. and sure. be at work by 4:30 or whatever the situation may be. Like, let them figure that out and we can just help offset that cost instead of trying to just provide that solution. But I think that kind of need to take care of the whole employee and to take care of the person is something that I think as an industry we're seeing, it's something that really speaks to my spirit. You know, I said early on in our conversation that I really fell in love with the people of public transportation.
You did.
I love the dynamic and sometimes hilarious and sometimes just endearing and amazing nature of our employees. And really making sure that they can be comfortable and successful and live their best lives while still being members of the Cap Metro team is kind of what feeds my spirit.
This episode is brought to you by Texas Mutual Insurance Company, the state's leading provider of workers' compensation insurance. Since 1991, Texas Mutual has been helping employers prevent workplace accidents. To learn more about how Texas Mutual provides a competitively priced source of workers' comp insurance for Texas employers, visit www.texasmutual.com.
So you were talking about some of the challenges, pervasive challenges in your industry. And you were talking about, and it makes sense, like the balance that your bus drivers have or your workers have with balancing like their real life with their work life. And I got to admit, my mind started going like, how might you double some of these things up? I mean, could there be a scenario where a bus driver is like dating someone and brings her date to come along and be on the bus? Like,
Well, you know, there is actually a whole Days of Our Lives drama that happens between any group of humans, well, by any means.
True.
But there are a number of our frontline employees that met their spouses while driving the bus.
Get out.
Yeah.
So, and were other bus drivers or patrons on the bus?
Both.
Okay. Both. Okay. Have you ever had a wedding on a bus?
I don't know if we've had one on the bus. I know we've had some proposals. I know we've had wedding photos taken on the bus. I don't know if the actual nuptials have been on the bus before.
Is that something, can someone pay to, could they rent a bus to be, get married on a bus?
We actually have weird limitations in federal law about what we can take money for. So if somebody really wants to take their wedding photos on a Kent Metro bus, call us up. We'll figure it out.
Okay. I love that. Maybe an additional revenue source
there
for you.
There you go.
I love it. Thank you. Dottie, you've talked to me about what you're seeing in the industry. Sounds like we're not alone in Austin with workforce challenges. Sounds like you're continuing to grapple with how you help with childcare and other issues. Are you seeing any inspiration in the private sector? Maybe even in other industries that you think could potentially be applicable to solving some of your challenges? I don't know. I'm a big believer in kind of unconventional mashups. And I'm wondering if you're seeing anything that intrigues you from other industries.
You know, there's nothing specific. Mm-hmm. I do think that there are a lot of places where I tend to see the people that are like, oh, I don't want to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's that reverse of that, where I do see, because private industry is so profit motivated, especially in workforce heavy places, like, you know, a warehouse space or mm-hmm. any place that requires just a lot of workers to keep it running, you can see sometimes private entities be a little turn and burn with their staff. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, as a public sector employer, we're grateful for every person that comes to the door that wants to be a public servant. And so we want to kind of do the care and feeding of those folks. And so really trying to differentiate ourselves in that way to make sure that what we are able to do is really show that, you know, we can care for you and you can help in turn help us care for our community and kind of give people a little bit of purpose to their work. I do think that's been something, you know, in the last generation, you know, the kids these days really do seem to want to make a difference in the world. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. really kind of grabbing a hold of that and showing that the work we do every day does make a difference in our world. And so whether or not the work you're doing is emptying the trash can or driving the bus or keeping our books in our accounting department, like as an organization, it takes all of those skills in order to make a difference in our community. And so kind of offering that kind of purpose as a attraction to our workers is something that we really try and focus on.
It's really clear to me through this conversation how much your employees, your staff, I mean, you talk about the Mac family, how much they really seem to mean to you, and also the customers. I've always known you have a big heart, but it's really clear to me what a big heart you have for this community.
Well, thank you. You know, having grown up here, I like to say that Austin grew up with me. Mm-hmm. You know, we were a much mm-hmm. smaller city when mm-hmm. I was a kid mm-hmm. than we are today. But I do think that, you know, I've always deep in my heart, I studied social work as an undergraduate, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So as a very young person, I wanted to figure out how to help the world and help it be a better place. And I feel fortunate that I found public transportation. It's a fun logistical puzzle to solve, but it also helps me improve my community. And I do believe deeply in the work that we do. I know that I would never want to live in a city that didn't have good public transportation. I like to say that Austin can't Austin without Cat Metro. All the things in Austin that we love about this community, our vibrant and, you know, diverse, eclectic kind of population, our institutes of higher education, that it's a, you know, kind of young and energetic city, that everyone can have an opportunity to advance here, kind of that live and let live kind of atmosphere. For all of those things to thrive, you need good public transportation.
You have to have people that can get to that. That makes complete sense.
And so we really need to be here in order for Austin to be the great city that I know and love. And so, you know, I adore getting the opportunity to do that every day.
Well, we're lucky to have you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Let's talk about this notion of community and how you have to get here. You've grown up in Austin. I've been in Austin now back over 25 years. And I think we both recognize the demographics are changing for a number of reasons. We see people kind of moving out of Austin. Doesn't mean that Austin's shrinking per se, but we do see people who are in maybe entry-level positions or lower economic levels or feeling like they need to move outside of our community. How, A, are you seeing that? And B, if you're seeing those same trends, how is Cap Metro adjusting your delivery model to recognize that Austin as a community isn't just that tight little around the university campus anymore? We really are a dispersed community, but we still want to have a community. How do you adapt as our transit authority?
Yeah, it is definitely something that is happening.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I spend a lot of time preaching is land use.
Okay.
And I am so grateful for our local elected officials who are really working to try and fix land use. And the reason why I spend a lot of time preaching land use is that transportation is a logistical problem. It's all about getting people from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. And the closer together those points are, the easier it is to get them there.
Yeah.
If you live and work a block away from one another, well, then that's simple.
Yeah.
If you live and work 30 miles away from one another, that's a lot harder.
Yeah,
and so how we design our communities has a huge impact on how difficult or easy it is to provide transportation within those communities, whether it's public transit or bikes or pedestrians or roadways or whatever, the whole transit ecosystem. And so one of the reasons why a lot of people are moving out of the core of Central Texas is because it's really expensive to live in the mm-hmm. core of Austin. And mm-hmm. and the more expensive it gets, the harder it is for people to be able to afford to live here. And some of those things that make it expensive is how we decided to develop our land. And the Austin City Council has done a lot of things to try and change some regulations to make it easier to build more dense housing. And I think all of that absolutely has to happen. That's not to say that the goal is for every single person to live in a high-rise apartment building in Central Austin, because that's not right for everyone either. So as we look at our community becoming more and more suburban, we have to think about what kinds of travel patterns that creates, how much of that is now going to be into the city versus are they going to stay out in the suburbs? You know, one of the things that happened with the pandemic is that we all learned to work from home, whether we wanted to or not. If you had a job that could be done even partially remotely, you were doing it remotely during the pandemic. And so a lot of those ways of working have really changed. Mm-hmm. And so some of what we see, the vast majority of work now does want folks to come into the office mm-hmm. at least a little bit.
Yeah.
Kind of the patterns of how that works has changed a lot. But it means that we now have communities where, you know, we need to circulate within the community maybe a little bit more than it used to be. If you were always, you know, leaving your bedroom community and driving into town, then you were going to drive past a grocery store on your way home, right? You might not necessarily want to kind of just circulate within your community. And that connection to the core city was a lot more important. And we're seeing a lot more need for those sorts of connectors. You know, as an industry, we have really tried to figure out what is that middle ground. And we've launched what we call Cap Metro Pickup, which mm-hmm. is known in the industry as microtransit. And microtransit is really kind of halfway between a bus route and a ride-hailing service like Uber or Lyft. Mm-hmm. And so our pickup service is a zone-based service. We have 12 different zones throughout Central Texas.
Okay.
And anywhere within that geographic zone, you go on the app, or you can call us on the phone if you're not an app person, although most people use the app. You can go on the app and you say, I want to go from here to here within this zone. And we send a vehicle to come pick you up. So we have vehicles that go within that zone. And it's called micro transit because it is shared rides. So you may or may not be the only person on the vehicle. You may or may not go straight to where you're headed because we might need to stop and pick up somebody or drop somebody else off along the way. But it's a way for us to kind of connect those communities that are otherwise hard to connect because there just isn't enough density and enough people to run a bus down the major street and make have that be the answer. And so we've seen a lot of success with those sorts of zones in some of our suburban communities. We run a pickup zone in Leander. We run one in Lago Vista. We run one in Manor. They are all wildly successful. Our first pickup zone was actually in Manor. It's a fun story because we used to run what we call a deviated fixed route, which is a bus that went up and down the main street. And when you're on the bus, you could ask the driver to deviate from the route to drop you off. So you'd walk out to the bus, you'd go down to the Walmart, you'd get on the bus, you'd have all your groceries. And on the way back, you'd ask the driver to go a few blocks out of the way so you didn't have to walk with all your groceries. That was kind of the idea.
Yeah.
And that route was only mildly successful because you still had to get to the route. It still only went up and down the street. It kind of didn't do all the things. And so when we eliminated that service on a good day, it was carrying like a dozen people. Mm-hmm. I mean, not very many people at all. We put the Manor pickup zone in place. And within a month, we were carrying 100 people a day.
Wow.
Because it was working better for people, right?
Yeah.
Like it would come to you, you could hail it. And it's just a much better solution for that I need some flexibility to my trip solution.
Sure.
Because we all have these little mobile handheld computers we call phones.
Sure.
In our pockets now. And so it's available to us. And so that kind of innovation, microtransit is not the best solution for everything. If I put a microtransit zone downtown, nobody would ever want to do anything. They just want to ride around on the vehicles, and that wouldn't actually be sustainable. It would be way too expensive to operate. But for places where you've got a need and you've got enough people to need to move around, but not a good enough density or a good enough connection at the street network, oftentimes we've seen a lot of success in some neighborhoods where what the pickup zone is really doing is kind of connecting neighborhoods that are next to one another, but not well connected by their roadways because they were all built at different times. And so depending on, again, that land use connection, sometimes that microtransit might be a better answer. So we're really open to all sorts of solutions. Mm-hmm. We operate Cat Metro Bike Share. We're all about adding bikes to your trip, buses, trains, whatever options we can think of. We're willing to try them out.
I guess I've never thought to ask you this before. I've never thought about the connection between transit planning and economic development, though it makes a lot of sense. But how are you connected with economic development here in Austin? Do you regularly talk to them? Do you get a heads up in advance about an expansion or a relocation? Like, how does that work? And do you tend to have your transit services follow where the businesses are, or are you tracking more where the workers live? Like, I'm curious how you look at all those parts of the puzzle.
Yeah. We are very much engaged with folks who do economic development. In fact, we regularly participate with Opportunity Austin, who works on economic development, trying to attract business to Austin, because we understand and they understand that how employees move around is an important part of any business's decision on where they're going to locate their business. And how people move around is core to what we do. And so we want to make sure that we can marry those up where we can. You know, in a perfect world, no one would locate anything without first thinking about whether or not public transit was readily available. That is not exactly how it usually happens. And so we're always looking for, you know, those opportunities to be part of the conversation as early as possible. Mm-hmm. But then we also update our services on a regular basis based on what's actually happening in the world. So we are right now going through every 5 years, we do a planning effort. We're going through a process called Transit Plan 2035, where we're figuring out for the next 5 and 10 year period, kind of what is happening, where are the movements happening, what are the developments we know to be coming, where do we think things might be, and how should we plan our services? And we'll update that plan again in 5 years. So we're always pivoting to kind of meet the moment while also trying to help make sure people are doing things kind of on the front end. But that connection between transportation and economic development is undeniable. You know, when we talk to, and when you talk to employers, when you talk to employees, when you talk to anybody who's trying to, you know, manage things in a growth economy, we are fortunate in Central Texas to be in a growth economy. They're always looking about, well, how are we going to be able to move people and to move goods and services? And so thinking about that transportation piece up front is vital to economic growth for sure.
Yeah, I like what you said. In an ideal world, economic development would also talk to the workforce board about talent and talent delivery. So transit planning, workforce planning, economic development all go together.
I mean, if the more you plan, the better off you're going to be.
I think that's exactly right. Well, speaking of planning, but also thinking ahead, you've mentioned your 10 and 5 year plans. I'd like you to project 10 years down the road? And I know you don't have a crystal ball, but imagine you did, or maybe you do.
I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
All right. Well, so project 10 years down the road, what is transit in Austin going to look like that might surprise people 10 years from now?
We know 10 years from now, so we are on schedule to have opened our light rail system by 10 years from now. So that will...
So light rail will be here.
That shouldn't be a surprise, I hope, because
we've
already voted that in and are already working on it. Hopefully
people
are engaged,
but
to like actually be on it, right? 10 years from now, that will be great. So that one's not a surprise, but that will help shape the network of services that we operate. But I think... As I look out 10 years, what I really see is a need for us to be thinking much more regionally about transportation.
Okay.
When we talked a little bit earlier about growth and how the growth isn't necessarily in the central city. And the central city, we're not going to shrink the central city. It still needs all that it needs. But as we continue to grow, it's going to be in kind of our ring counties around Travis County. And so how do we as a region really come together to solve transportation more holistically and more globally? I think most people would be surprised by how much public transit we're going to need in some of our, what we would think of today as far out suburbs. Those areas are going to need public transportation sooner than most people think. And so we're here to help and we are ready to have those conversations now. We want to start the planning yesterday on how we can make all of that work.
Yeah, well, we're lucky to have you. Do you think you'll still be at the helm 10 years from now?
10 years from now is right out about the time I will be figuring out what I want to do.
Yeah, so. you and me both will be. We'll see if 10 years from now we're sitting down talking about how accurate our projections were.
I love it.
Well, this was such a pleasure to have you on the Austin Hires Local podcast, Dottie. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for sharing your story. And thank you for being just a full of heart leader in our community. We're truly lucky to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Austin Hires Local, powered by Workforce Solutions Capital Area. To learn more about what you heard today or to see what Workforce Solutions Capital Area can do for you, visit WFSCapitalArea.com. To stay updated on new episodes, subscribe to Austin Hires Local on your podcast app of choice. Until next time.